In Book 1, Chapter 4, Smith is going to lay out some of the basics of monetary economics. Appropriately, the chapter is entitled, Of the Origin and Use of Money. Smith asks the question of which commodities are most likely to circulate as money, and he suggests it's the commodities which traders think that other traders are at least likely to refuse in exchange. Smith also argues that these commodities are most likely to be the precious metals, such as gold. Gold, for instance, possesses the important features of being both durable and divisible, like other precious metals. Just to continue with some basics of money, we can see that a high value for the monetary asset will also mean liability to fraud. If, for instance, gold is very valuable, a small change in the amount of gold in a coin will mean that the coin has actually a big difference in value. This means that when individuals are trading gold coins, unless the values are somehow guaranteed, they will put great efforts into weighing the coins, assessing the value of the coins, and making sure that the coins really contain as much gold as is claimed. That, of course, will raise the cost of trading. Smith then points out the obvious conclusion that there can be efficiency gains from having stamped money, whereby a government or some other centralized body guarantees just exactly how much the coins are worth. By the way, these here are stamped coins from the days of the Roman Empire. Yet government does not by any means solve the main problems of monetary economics. Yes, governments can certify the value of coins, but very often it's governments which are themselves debasing the value of coins. For instance, governments may clip coins, as is possibly pictured here, and take away some of the metal of coins, and use coin clipping or coin debasement as a way of transferring resources away from money holders and toward the governments themselves. Smith had a pretty clear understanding of both the potential benefits and potential costs of government participation in a monetary order. Overall, it's striking and quite remarkable just how much monetary economics Smith is covering in a fairly small number of pages here. Finally, this chapter closes with a key idea that's not so important in this chapter itself, but will drive some future parts of the book, and that is the distinction between value in use and value in exchange. And Smith mentions that this is an important difference, and he discusses the case of diamonds, which have a high value in exchange, but not always such a high value in use, and water, which has a high value in use, but not always such a high value in exchange. And Smith is hereby introducing the so-called water-diamonds paradox, and from this he will be moving on toward his theory of value, his theory of exchange, and his theory of market price. Overall, this chapter is perhaps not one of the most original parts of The Wealth of Nations, but it can be said that when it comes to monetary economics, Smith is a very clear and very perceptive thinker, and he has been synthesizing many of the best ideas which came before him and putting them all together in terms of a coherent, easily understood overall framework.